It might be the car or light truck that gets you to your job every day. Maybe your child drives it to school. Or perhaps your drivers deliver goods to the customers who keep your business going. The bottom line is, you rely heavily on that vehicle to be safe and reliable day after day, and that means regular maintenance by professionals trained in the latest automotive repair techniques. For Brenda and myself, that means Advanced Automotive is the only repair shop we trust with our personal vehicles. Advanced Automotive does everything they can to make car care easy. Founded in 1993 by Tim Morlock and now owned by his son Cody, carrying on a tradition of honest work at a fair price. Find out for yourself by visiting AdvancedAutoReading.com or go to RepairPal.com, or you could just call 530-244-4423. It's a great little repair shop that's a bit hard to find, but worth the effort. At 5756 F West Side Road in Reading. Advanced Automotive. And hello once again, it's Boomer Tech Radio. I'm Bob Belongi.
And I'm Brenda Belongi.
Analog, living in a digital world. Welcome to the show with goodies, gadgets, gizmos, and of course, as always, the tech news you can use. Brought to you each and every week by Advanced Automotive of Reading, safe, reliable car care for their customers and our community. You can reach us at boomertechradio@gmail.com for show suggestions. We come up with that. We use our Flipboard app. We look through magazines. And occasionally, we run into random and not-so-random people who have interesting things to talk about. And such is the case with Lee Esses here, who is who I work with. She is she's an example of the new media. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, like in the last few seconds, I suddenly said, "I know what I want to talk about." And we have mentioned this several times on the show, Brenda, about how the technology, the smart devices, the shrinking down of cameras and things like that have, and the more powerful computers, you're now packing around a computer in your pocket, how all of this has enabled the ordinary person to create professional quality results. We have albums that are recorded. Now, famously, Boston's Tom Scholz had a recording studio in the basement of his house, but he had the means by which to build that. Now you can do studio quality work
out of a shoebox, practically.
Pretty much out of a shoebox, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. And the other thing, though, is look at the pros, you know, the big studios, the technology they're using for making movies. So a lot of B-roll is done on even on an iPhone and things like that. Pretty amazing.
Feature films are being shot on cameras with a price tag a fraction of what the old Arriflex or Panavisions or those, and the results, if anything, are better. The Red One camera, it costs $12,000, but you look at the price tag on those old Arriflexes. It was pretty spendy. Matter of fact, digging through my pile of stuff, I came across a video recorder circa 1972 that used open reel quarter inch tape.
Oh my.
It was a VTR, and a reel of tape would last about 20 minutes, which was about as long as the battery would last, but it was a two-piece unit. The recorder weighs about 30-some-odd pounds, and you would sling this thing over your shoulder, and then you have a handheld camera on a long cable. But that was home video recording in the 1970s. Now we do it on our iPhones for much longer times at much higher qualities.
Drones have changed things as well. You can actually get a very affordable drone in almost a recreational pricing, if you will. It doesn't have to be super expensive to produce pro-quality results.
I've even heard of people getting, because you were talking about cameras being so cheap, I've heard of people butting two cameras right next to each other and filming and then being able to transfer it to 3D later.
Yep.
So it's super easy for everybody across the board to suddenly do what only Hollywood could do for so long.
Absolutely. And that leads me to you are a one-person publishing house. Now, this used to be a whole building full of people.
So what I do, I work with Aspen House Publishing, and we have a collection of people with different skills. So we have editors who specify in nonfiction, editors who specify in poetry, fiction of this kind or that kind, whatever. But what we do is we help authors publish their own books. So the self-publishing industry didn't exist 20 years ago.
Right.
Right.
And then all of a sudden with ebooks and digital media, we could. And it's like, I don't have to take my manuscript to an agent in hopes that they might take it to an editor who might end up working with the publishing company who might end up paying me a small fraction of what they end up making from the books on the other side.
That's the rub right there.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And even getting your foot in the door when mm-hmm. there were so many people who were sending in manuscripts.
And it's such a closed industry.
Mm-hmm.
And it's opening up dramatically because we have authors who are able to create their own covers and who are able to voice their own books for audiobooks, which is a whole other tangent we can go on later. But we have all of these, what you used to need specialists for, the cover design, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
We can Photoshop whatever we want, or a free version of, I use GIMP because it's free and I like it.
Mm-hmm.
But we can create covers by the authors can, something that's exactly in line with their novel, and put this book up online and be a self-published author.
Mm-hmm. Now, this tells me that Amazon knew exactly what they were doing when they pretty much locked down the market. They are the 400-pound gorilla of not just books, but ebooks, mm-hmm. and especially audiobooks when they purchased Amazon. And I have a story about that, about Audible. And the rather, I feel, unfair prices they charge because mm-hmm. they take 60%.
They do take a rather large amount.
And a person I was working with, I went through this process with somebody.
I love that. Rather large amount is an understatement.
Yeah. Well,
when this individual found out what Audible was keeping for themselves, because we don't all work.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they have to buy the servers and the promotional and all that. But when he found out what they were keeping, he soured on the deal and pulled out.
Hmm. Well, they have different sets of numbers for if you're digitally publishing the ebook version with them, and if you're trying to market your book, your audiobook to other places as well. So. Google has recently promoted and tried to get more audiobooks and sort of take a larger bite out of that pie from Audible. And so a lot of authors have to make the decision, do I want to go with just Audible and get a slightly larger stipend from each sale, or can I go smaller and diversify a little bit more?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something the self-published author then has to make that decision for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Looking at self-publishing, there are different ways to market and self-publish. I'm a fan of the Kindle Unlimited, where mm-hmm. you pay a monthly fee, and they have a group of books who they have signed authors to market their wares. And I guess it's on a percentage basis, but you actually are not a big fan of that, right?
Not as much. You're limiting your audiences that way. So personally, I have an iPhone. And so when I'm reading books, I'm reading it through the iBook store. So if you go through the KDP route, you cannot put your book on the iBook store as well.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other limitations with the iBook store. You have to be with the publishing company or have a DBA or something like that. Because they're... Apple has this thing where they're trying to maintain quality,
mm-hmm.
whereas Microsoft has this mentality of accept everything, which is why you get fired on one and the other.
Rarely do I actually close a book and set it aside, but there have been a few on the Amazon platform that have gone,
I just can't finish this.
You actually put this out. Your fourth grade English teacher is spinning violently in the grave.
And that's a part of what Aspen House does is there's, from an audience point of view, when you're looking at books, the traditional published books are going to have a lot more quality put into them.
Right.
You've got the professional editors, you've got the professionals all across the board, as compared to your self-published novels, have this stigma of they're never going to be good because you can put it up without having edited it. edited it. So what Aspen House, part of what Aspen House does is we help bridge that gap between the low quality of self-published, but with all the advantages for the author of a self-published book.
So that's a good thing. And I'm not surprised. There's definitely a place for that because you're right. There can be a lot of junk out there that's mm-hmm. very poorly written. And people will ignore that, but if you have a source where you know it's been vetted to a certain
yes.
degree,
yeah.
then it's going to be a lot more attractive where you'll get return mm-hmm. customers, if you will. And yet at the same time, for the self-published author, what a great thing. You know, everyone wants to be the next J.K. Rowling type of thing.
yes.
And, or the next superstar musician or what have mm-hmm. you. And it kind of annoys me that in the publishing world as well as in the music world and in any artistic endeavor like that, somebody decides what's good and what isn't good.
Yeah.
And so Lindsay Sterling got into that where they said, you'll never make it. So she said, phooey on you, and went ahead and did her own thing. And she's enormously popular.
Yeah. And
so to me, there's a lot of artists that are out there that the public – you know, art is art. It's whatever the beholder makes of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so someone like Lindsay Sterling would go completely unnoticed, if you will,
mm-hmm.
if she wasn't able to do her own thing. And yet she's very successful.
Yeah.
So it's an opportunity for people that they don't have to let somebody else judge
yeah.
whether they're worthy of a product or not. Because, you know, Pet Rocks came out at one time. You're probably way too young for that.
No, I know.
Who thought that would take off? No, it was a flash in the pan, but still, you know, that's not something anybody would have predicted as being viable.
There's an interesting thing the Internet has brought about, and that is hyper-niche markets, where instead of having to market my fantasy action novel that I've written to people in Reading and hoping to spread out from there, I can put it online and talk to 1,000 other people who write the exact same genre as I do across the world,
right.
And all of a sudden I have a much larger audience, mm-hmm. therefore I can get super specific with mm-hmm. whatever my target audience is.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Whereas before you had sort of the Shakespeare mentality of marketing to all classes.
Appeal, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Appeal to so what does that do in the industry? It probably
bypasses
something like that that's maybe good, or it mellows mm-hmm. out something that doesn't deserve to do that. So we have a friend who's an author,
mm-hmm.
and she is in the romance category,
mm-hmm.
But it's from her that I learned that within romance there are many different genre or specific things within the romance category.
Mm-hmm.
So she hates it when she has to write the sex scenes because that's not what she
does. The bodice ripper.
Yeah, she writes what she calls romantic stories,
mm-hmm.
Which are don't have that steamy stuff mm-hmm. in it, and she hates it when she has to put that in there. And she always has a little bit of it in her books because her editors make her do it.
Yeah.
And she says,
put a little pepper on it.
She said, it's like the worst thing ever. I'm kind of reminded of the book Jaws. I think it's chapter 8, and I don't know why I remember that so specifically because I just don't usually. But it was this whole sex chapter, and it's like, that is so out of place in the whole story.
And
yeah.
then keep going on
maybe
with the good
stuff. Yeah, maybe it was the age that I read the book at the same time. I was like, what's all this junk? You
mm-hmm.
know, let's just get past that stuff.
So,
but it was so out of character in the rest of the book.
Mm-hmm. I have a friend of mine who writes young adult dystopian romance. And so none of the sex scenes because it's aimed at young adults, teens. And I write mostly modern day action novels. And she always teases me because after she reads one of my manuscripts, she's like, well, does this person end up with this person and do they end up dating and this and that? Like, that's not what the story is about.
Yeah.
Like, I have very little romance in my writing because that's just not what I want to read. And I write what I want to read as my own target audience.
Mm-hmm.
So it's but again, we can have that hyper niche audience.
But the great thing about like what you're doing is that it leaves you wondering.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe
and
those characters show
it can,
up again. Yeah, you can lead into something else.
But it's not pivotal to this story.
Right.
You know, we don't have to know that Leia ends up with Han until, you know, much later on in the next generation of whatever.
Right.
But that's not what the story is about.
Right.
And it's just sort of a side plot.
Now, most of us in the baby boomer generation, we are big fans of paper books.
Mm-hmm.
However, when you go on vacation and you need to take a shopping bag full of books and eat up your entire travel allowance on dead tree, or you can take one of these tablets or Kindles or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are, you know, e-readers were really big. I mean, they spiked, I think, about 2010, if I recall.
Mm-hmm. Sounds about right.
I think that was the first CES that Brenda and I attended, and e-readers were everywhere. Well, general-purpose tablets, like the Tab E, which I have here in front of me, sort of took over that. They can serve as e-readers or as other multifunction devices. But it seems to me that the portable media is making it a lot easier for people to read books on the go.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people with better eyes than mine read, of course, everything off their smartphone.
Yeah, I read off of my smartphone, but I also have paper books. And I think the interesting difference in my life is the sharing ability. So if I have a paper book, the paper book mm-hmm. I have right now is from Carl Bott, and so we both are fans of this particular author and his series, and so the paper book I have in my bag is from him, but the most recent book I purchased is on my phone,
mm-hmm.
and it's about the same price as a paper book, but I have this one. I can pull up Tosca Lee's Demon much more quickly than I can pull up Jack Reacher's Without Fail, which is over in my book over there, and I have to go find it.
Except the paper book doesn't require batteries.
Yes.
It does require light. You can read, you know, remember, have you ever read a book in the bed covers, you know, with a flashlight?
Don't tell my mom, but I think I went through the entire Little House series.
There you go. See, so, you know, that is an advantage of e-readers, too. They're backlit. So, mm-hmm.
And this is constantly charged anyway. I'm not likely to run out of battery on this. I travel a lot. I spend a fair amount of time on the plane, and so this is great to have with me, and so I don't have to get into the luggage and out and blah blah blah.
This being your iPhone.
This being my phone that I'm waving about the studio, you guys can't see. But I have this charged anyway.
So you're flying a lot, and I didn't bother looking the last time, but are they starting to provide USB ports on a lot of the seats now? I thought that was
the
just
larger
a first
planes,
class thing.
Yeah, the larger planes do have those, and they also have, you know, headphone jacks and that kind of thing,
right.
And they also have Wi-Fi.
They had headphone jacks. I mean, the planes actually flew. They weren't like Fred Flintstone, but...
but the whole airplane mode, you can have your phone in airplane mode and Wi-Fi on at the same time now because they have Wi-Fi on airplanes.
Yeah, it's so interesting. So talk about your company and kind of how you got started. Why is it named what it's named?
Aspen House?
Yeah.
So how it started out was a bunch of my fellow authors, we have a writing club, and we went to a writing conference together, and there we got to meet agents, we got to meet publishing companies, we got to meet editors, we got to learn a lot about the industry, because we were all getting very good at the writing part of it, but the industry we knew almost nothing about. And we all decided afterward that we hated the industry. It was very much a closed door of, we're better
than
you.
Never mind that noise.
We're better than you because we're published authors traditionally and blah, blah, blah. And audiences don't care. So we're doing a lot of we decided as a group we wanted to self-publish. Now, self-publishing is not just writing, but it's the editing, the cover design, the
marketing,
all of that.
Everything, right.
The compression. So we each, as a writing club, each member of us took a different phase of the process. And so I specialized in a lot of the media and the audiobooks and that kind of thing. And then we had somebody else who specialized in graphic design because she did some of that in school. And so she's doing all of the covers. And so we, as a group, created Aspen House. It is technically owned by me, but I'm kind of the coordinator for everything because I like being in charge. But aspens, the tree, they're actually asexual. So a little science lesson here. Their roots go down underground, horizontal, and then they pop back up. So when you're looking at a grove of aspens, it's all the same creature.
Right. They've been called the world's largest living organisms.
Yeah. And, you know, ant colonies sometimes will argue for that title.
However, well, except for the fact that genetically any aspen tree within that grove is identical to mm-hmm. the one next to it.
Yeah.
They clone, if you will.
Yes. Which can be devastating for diseases, and that's... Anyway. We can go on a whole science tangent off there.
Aspens are beautiful in the fall.
Absolutely. And the point is we chose aspens because they're a networking type of creature, and they're each interdependent on each other. We talked about redwoods for the same reason, because their roots interlock and they hold each other up, and that's how they can get so high. But we decided Aspen House just rolled off the tongue a lot easier than Redwood House.
Redwood House.
Which makes it sound like a kid's tree house. we're not Ewoks, I promise. So we decided on Aspen House. And
that's cool.
Because we're all networking and holding each other up in this project. And we are technically not publishers, because we help authors publish their own novels. And then we as authors wanted to make sure that they could retain, authors could retain the rights to what they wanted. That if they really wanted the scene in there or really didn't want the scene in there, whatever, they can write that. And it's we're a support group. We've gone through the process. We know how to compress a book for Google eBooks or whatever. And so that's a whole other amount of time that every author would have to learn individually.
Right.
Or they can come to us. We've perfected it already. And then we can turn the crank and get it out there.
So kind of the technical consultants of the business or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of self-publishing, you know, speaking of networking, I'm sure you network with other self-publishing outfits.
Oh, yeah.
And this is a growing thing. What's been your experience in the time that you've been involved with it? How quickly has it expanded? You know,
so
talk about that.
A lot of people are reinventing the wheel, and that's part of what we're trying to avoid with Aspen House. But they're trying to create the best compression for their books or whatever. And so, because a lot of authors are self-publishing, and then they don't quite know what's the next step, or if they miss a step here and there or whatever, how do they market and pick it up? So we're trying to just get advice out there. And if people have questions for us, we're always happy to answer questions, because I like feeling smart. So, yes, ask me as many questions as you can.
When you talk about compression, what do you mean by
sorry, getting a little technical. After you've finished editing your document, you have a Word document most likely, or a Google eDoc, or whatever you wrote it on. It needs to get into what's called an EPUB format, so that it can be, or MOBI is kind of phasing out, but mostly EPUB is the popular one right now. So it needs to change to a different file format so that my phone can read it.
Right, like MP4s, for instance, in videos or whatever will play cross-format.
Yeah.
You know, iOS cross-platform, tablet, desktop, whatever it is you want to play it on. Yeah, that makes sense.
So as I have my Word document that I now have, I'm holding it in my hands, you can't see it, but I have my Word document here, and it needs to somehow become an EPUB document so that it can go to a Kindle or the eBook store.
Right.
And each of these platforms have different recipes they like. And by recipe, I mean different types of compression. I'm a video person. So.
Right, in video it would be a codec, is
how
it make it play, right.
Yeah, so each of these platforms has a slightly different recipe that they're looking for, so whatever your book is optimized for, Google Books versus...
Or plugins, you know, mini, micro, you know, lightning cable, whatever. It's the same kind of thing, whatever's compatible.
It's the software version of that. Plugging in this thing versus that.
Right.
There we go. Can we hold you over for one more, or do you got to scoot?
I can stay for one more, I think.
Cool, because I got more questions.
She does. Sure. Hey, you want to get in touch with us here at Boomer Tech Radio? BoomerTechRadio@gmail.com. When we come back, I want to ask Ashley some questions when I can get a word in edgewise here. I'm in a room with two alpha personality women.
We're fist bumping on screen.
You've worked in mass media television.
Yes.
And I want to talk to you about, and you can think about this over the break, the opening up of the ability to get your word out anytime, anywhere is a powerful tool. But with great power, of course, comes, as the saying goes, great responsibility. I want to talk about that and some of the things that we have seen in terms of the misuse of that power when we come back on Boomer Tech Radio, the tech news you can use. We'll be right back. Ever since we started Boomer Tech Radio, Advanced Automotive has been part of our program. But Tim and Cody Morlock are more than just our advertisers. They're our friends, and they are our first choice when we have our personal vehicles serviced. Why? Well, because after your home, your car is probably your second biggest investment, and it's vital that it be safe and dependable. Advanced Automotive has a skilled staff of certified technicians ready to diagnose your vehicle and get it running right. Advanced Automotive is listed on RepairPal.com, a national rating site where customers can leave reviews and even get an estimate on the cost of a repair. Go where the professionals take their vehicles to be serviced. Advanced Automotive in Reading, on the web at AdvancedAutoReading.com. Visit them at 5756 F Westside Road, just off Bonneview. Call them at 530-244-4423. Advanced Automotive.
The annual Reading East Rotary Ducky Derby is coming September 30th at Reading's Caldwell Park. Be a part of the Reading East Rotary's effort to keep our kids drug and alcohol free. First prize is a 16-sleeper houseboat vacation from Shasta Marina, valued at $2,700. Details on all the other amazing prizes, sponsor, or ticket information, go to ReadingDuckyDerby.com or call 225-8583. The 29th Annual Ducky Derby, September 30th in Caldwell Park. Get your tickets today. Brought to you by KCNR 1460 AM.
Shasta Regional Medical Center is located in the heart of downtown Reading and was the recipient of the 2017 HealthGrades Patient Safety and Excellence Award. Our hospital is committed to always providing exceptional care and performance as a certified chest pain center, certified primary stroke center, and most recently earning the Joint Commission's Gold Seal of Approval for hip and knee replacement. When it comes to quality, compassion, and community, Shasta Regional Medical Center is the community choice.
This is Diane Hawks with the Address Realty and KCNR. I've been racking my brain trying to figure out how I could be of assistance to some of the car fire victims. So, I would like to donate 25% of my commissions to four families who have lost their homes in this horrific fire and wish to relocate in Shasta County. Even if you haven't yet received your settlement, you could call me now to reserve your commissions. Call Diane at 530-227-6401.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell with Maxwell Insurance and Financial. As a community, we are all recovering from the car fire. We understand the seriousness of this disaster and the frustration of dealing with the insurance companies. Insurance policies can be very difficult to understand. If you have questions about your insurance policy and need help in any way, please feel free to give us a call at 221-0441. This is Judy Maxwell with Maxwell Insurance and Financial.
Securities offered through Mutual of Omaha Investor Services Incorporated, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA and SIPC. Advisory services offered through Mutual of Omaha Investor Services Incorporated, a SEC-registered investment advisory firm. Judy Maxwell, representative. Maxwell Insurance and Financial and Mutual of Omaha Investor Services Incorporated are not affiliated. The information presented is intended for educational purposes only. It is not intended to replace the advice of an attorney or a qualified tax professional. This is not an offer or solicitation in any jurisdiction where they are not authorized to do business. Registered branch address, 1378 Hilltop Drive, Redding, California, 96003.
Hi, I'm Sharon Clark of Home Helpers. It's amazing to look back at all the families we've touched since 2004, but our clients say it best.
I want to express my deep appreciation for the love and support you and your...
So fortunate to have an organization like Home Helpers.
You'll never know how much your contribution meant or how greatly you touched our lives.
Thank you so much for helping me care for my husband.
After hearing what it's meant to them, I truly can't imagine doing anything else. When you need help for your loved one, choose Home Helpers. There is no place like home.
It's a given that your car or light truck is going to need service sooner or later. And often, waiting until later means a lot bigger repair bill. Now, there are many repair shops in town, so it pays to do your research and find out where your friends and neighbors take their vehicles and check reviews online as well. Advanced Automotive of Reading is listed on RepairPal.com, where customers just like you talk about their experience. Advanced Auto has been making quality auto care easy since 1993 and has a philosophy of keeping things simple. Stop by their shop at 5756 F West Side Road, just off Bonneview. You'll see vehicles from local businesses and first responders in the yard because those customers rely on cars and trucks that are safe and reliable. But more than that, safe vehicles mean a safer community. And honestly, It's the right way to do business. Check them out for yourself. Advanced Automotive, 5756 F West Side Road in Reading, 244-4423. Welcome back to the show with goodies, gadgets, and gizmos, and the tech news. You can, did I really sound super caffeinated on the first break?
At the beginning of the show, yeah. Were you super caffeinated?
I have had most of a cup of a cup, heck.
A pot of coffee.
Yeah. I don't know. I get jazzed up about this program because we've been doing it for 10 years and we've seen a lot of changes and I just enjoy doing it. It's Bob and Brenda and Boomer Tech Radio here with us in the studio. Lee Esses, she is the head honcho of Aspen Publishing and does a great many other things. And Brenda had a few more questions and I got some questions and I can get a word in here. But go ahead.
Well. So going back to self-publishing being mm-hmm. a way for people that might not otherwise get recognized out there in the world with their writings, musings, whatever it is that they have, mm-hmm. it could be an audiobook or written text type thing. If someone is thinking about getting started in this, what's some good advice for someone that wants to be self-published?
Write a book.
Well, what I meant was...
I'm saying that because a lot of the people I have asking me that question have not yet finished a manuscript.
Okay, so that makes sense.
So writing a book is essential to being a self-published author,
yeah.
Or at least an anthology of poems or something.
I kind of assumed that these people were coming forth with something already in hand.
Oh, I have this idea for a book. Great, write it, come back to me.
Yeah, well, that makes
paperback
sense.
Paperback writer.
You're not going to get very far. No one's going to help you do that type mm-hmm. of thing. Yeah, that you have to get that down. Is there a preferred length of manuscript that seems to work well?
It depends on your genre. So I have my particular genre that I write is modern day action. Most of those, unless you're, again, the big headliners can break the rules. If you look at the word count of the first Harry Potter book versus, I think, 5 is the longest.
Yes.
It's almost double the first book.
Yes.
So when you're a big name, those rules don't always apply.
Right.
But as far as if you're petitioning or if you're going for a certain what's the industry standard, my particular genre, action, tends to be between 60 and 80,000 words. So if you've written a 425,000 word novel, that is way too long.
Yeah. Break it up or shorten it.
Yeah.
Chances are you can cut a lot of it out.
That's going to be at least a trilogy.
I believe it. I'm not sure who to attribute it to, but there was a famous author who said, when you finish your first draft, go back and throw out every other word.
Yeah.
You can get rid of a lot of buzz, too, I've noticed with people. They don't have to use as many mm-hmm. buzz as they do.
And every author has their own quirks in
yeah,
this and that.
Absolutely.
I find when I'm writing, I write in acts. So act 1, act 2, act 3. You don't necessarily see that on the other side, but in that
your creative process.
Yeah. That's a lot of storytelling if you watch a TV show.
Sure.
You go out and see a play, a movie, whatever. The 3-act style is most common.
Sure.
And there's a little bit of 5-act style, which is I might be getting a little too technical here, but that's a little older. That's kind of Shakespearean because you had to have each act its own scene because of the physics of set changes. So that's kind of an older style. We're past
yeah,
that now with
sure.
movies.
Yeah.
But the 3-act style is what's most popular when you're watching a TV show. So that's what I tend to write toward.
Well, and if you think about this, I'll backtrack a little bit. There's a lot in film that comes from the early days of the film industry that are time-honored techniques
mm-hmm.
that there's a reason, there's usually a technical reason for it. A lot of it has to do with how the human brain works
mm-hmm.
and how your eye brain processes information and gives a certain look and feel to that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Theater, of course, is ancient, and 3 acts is, time-honored within
mm-hmm.
the theater deal, and then writing also has its rhythms to it that are time-honored things. So what you're saying makes a lot of sense.
And almost, there are a lot of basic kinds of stories, especially like the hero's journey. You
mm-hmm.
see that with Hercules, you see it with
mm-hmm.
Luke Skywalker, you see it with Harry Potter, you see it all over the place. Almost any time you have a hero, it's a hero's journey type story. And so you have the first meeting with the bad guy in Act 1, and you've established all your main characters in Act 1. And then that ends with some sort of tragedy. You spend most of Act 2 broken down. He's trying to learn to figure out the bad guy and the good guy rarely see each other in Act 2. Unless you don't know who the bad guy is, and that's a whole other tangent. But speaking generally here, you don't see the good guy and the bad guy don't see each other until Act 3, in which the bad guy loses, the good guy wins, and that's Act 3, and everyone lives happily ever after.
Right.
So that's a super standard recipe for a story. If you're watching commercials, even they have a problem-solution type style.
Right.
And so that problem-solution...
Got a dirty house? Here's a Swiffer.
That's exactly what I end up telling people all the time when we're doing radio commercials mm-hmm. is present the problem, and here's how you get the solution.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and that's an appeal to the human experience.
That's how
human
stories
life,
work.
Human
so
nature, right.
I recently read a novel by a local author. I won't say who it is. But it's a mystery novel, murder mystery. But the murder does not happen until halfway through the novel. And it's I believe a self-published book. And so as I'm reading it, I'm going, okay, I like the characters. They're interesting. But without the problem introduced in Act 1.
You haven't hooked them.
Yeah, I don't really have a reason to continue reading. It feels like a slice of life, which is not something you want for a mystery novel.
Yeah, a murder mystery should always begin with a chalk outline. I mean,
absolutely.
Those
are my
night.
Favorite. Yeah.
Suddenly a shot rang out.
Yeah.
And I understand wanting to attach to the character before you kill it.
Joey didn't see that coming.
Well, that's what, and I know you're not a fan of it, because here's a disclaimer. Ashley is coaching me on my personal writing odyssey.
Project.
and I'm a fan of because of my video experience, I'm a fan of using the flashback effectively.
Mm-hmm.
And to fill in the gaps in the story. But you start off with a kaboom, and then you start filling in,
right.
backfilling the essential story bits, as is in the
case
of...
Film does the same thing.
Yeah, film does it. So I approach it as if it's a film format. Our current television addiction, The Last Ship, because it's a Navy thing, does a lot of backfill. Not
mm-hmm.
not too much. It's mostly current action, but they when they need to,
pieces.
They go back and fill
Lost,
in.
Lost yeah. did yeah. something similar.
Yeah.
They halfway through this first season, they go back to Patient Zero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the point of my question about all of that was that again, getting back to time honored things with it, some
mm-hmm.
of the best cinematography and things like that Bob and I have seen is they relied on these time-honored
Absolutely.
Tacks. And so to be successful, I think that those things have already been tried and true, and they're definitely going to appeal.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyone who wants to come along and
yes.
does the murder and the murder mystery halfway through the book, maybe you don't want to try that
tack,
because that's not quite as effective.
Yes,
and that's something you can help people with.
And that's something that authors don't always identify in their own work. And that's something when I'm training somebody to become a better writer, because I'm not saying they're terrible writers. I am constantly training myself to become a better writer. And one of the things I do is I will read a book or watch a movie or whatever, and I'll analyze it. It's like, I really like this scene. What is it about it that
the
I like?
The technical aspects
yeah.
of it. Yeah.
And what is it about it that I don't like? And I had somebody ask in an online forum I follow, what is the last sentence that you read in a book that made you close the book and stare at the wall for a second?
That's
and
great.
My answer is, get the potato peeler. That was the answer to that. And it's not necessarily that line, but that's the line where I closed the book and stared at the wall for a moment. But it's all the backstory before that.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's not an interesting line in and of itself. But understanding how they set that up is important.
Well, I'm reminded of the film Pulp Fiction
mm-hmm.
and some of the great lines in there that take it out of context. You're scratching your head.
Yeah,
but as part of that tapestry, you're going, oh, that's profound.
Yes. And
I got to pull Pulp Fiction again.
I have to see that again. Because usually when I'm in a movie, I want them, you know, the bad guy annihilated or something
mm-hmm.
like that. I don't want to have to think about it too much.
It's said that every story is a variation of the hero's journey.
Right.
You know, yeah.
A lot of stories are. If it's protagonist versus villain.
Yeah, black hat, white hat. I mean, you know, spy versus spy in Mad Magazine. It was always that way, right? You know.
So something I've found that's it's kind of a twist on the hero's journey, or it's more like a redefinition, is a lot of authors write their main character as the good guy, the angel on the shoulder, and then the antagonist is the bad guy. I like to have someone else, a best friend or a mentor, the Obi-Wan character, whatever, they are the good guy, and then the antagonist is the bad guy. The main character should have to choose between the two. That struggle is what makes Act 2 interesting.
Right.
Is the decision, the struggle between good and evil.
That's such a human experience as well. Yeah.
And that's why I think anti-heroes are so much more popular than heroes.
Deadpool. Oh, especially nowadays.
It's like,
Deadpool.
Yeah. It's like, go walk down the street and email me, leeesses@gmail.com or l.esses@aspenhousepublishing. Email me your results of this poll. Go and ask people, would they prefer Superman or Batman? Which is your favorite?
Oh, well, I'll take Batman.
Yeah.
Everyone takes Batman every time. Yeah. And
it's such an enigma and a much darker character.
Because he's not the cliche good guy.
Right.
And it's like Superman has no good influence over him where he's struggling between good and evil.
Right.
Batman does.
Right.
And the struggle between even Batman and Bruce Wayne. That's an interesting story.
Yeah.
And so it's that kind of a struggle that's interesting.
I read an interesting discussion. We're a little off in the weeds
here,
we're into some popular culture stuff. why the DC universe is, with the exception of one or two Batman movies and, of course, Wonder Woman, is falling flat while the Marvel universe is
exploding,
gaining momentum.
I'm going to put a caveat on that. The DC universe in TV is phenomenal. The Marvel universe in TV is
terrible.
But
that's an interesting
point of
view.
In theaters, Marvel's winning every time.
Yeah.
Interesting. And yet, television and film are related, but they are not the same.
It's a different medium. Yeah, you have to understand.
Very different mediums. Yeah. Speaking of which, she's worked in.
You worked in.
News responsibility media. With media.
Yeah, we teased that at the opening. Yeah.
Yes.
And we have talked about things like Facebook Live, Periscope, all that. YouTube, even.
Mm-hmm.
They enable ordinary people to produce near professional or near professional quality work. Never mind what the content. The content could be pure crap.
The video quality.
the presentation can be very, very high quality.
Yeah.
That's a very powerful tool, and I have seen some just absolutely insane and at times dangerous nonsense put out as fact. And now we're all wired to accept that which fits our own personal internal agenda. That's been proven over and over again. Which is why I laugh at some of these political things, because people have their minds made up. You're just reinforcing what people
it's
have already decided.
It's not
going to
change anybody's mind.
No.
Yeah. I guarantee it.
So a lot of money gets spent trying to change people's minds when they're not going to be changed. What I worry about, though, is with the 24-hour news cycle, with the ability of people to go out and gather news on their own without any vetting of their intention. We have the potential for some seriously misunderstanding. I have this nightmare about somebody staging a racially motivated incident and putting it out on the internet and all hell breaks. Yeah.
War of the Worlds on steroids.
Yeah. Just a tweet about a bomb going off at the White House caused a massive stock market stutter until the computer kicked in and slowed everything. Yeah, it was a fake tweet. But you can imagine staging a Ferguson-style event for the sole purpose of inciting riots.
Yeah, that's definitely possible. And it's the people you're reaching out to, again, they're the ones who are looking to reconfirm that.
They are predisposed.
I heard somebody say something interesting earlier this week, that in this media age, all of a sudden we trust our ears more than our eyes. I never really thought about it before.
That's really interesting.
If you can hear it,
yes,
then you're going to trust it.
Because
if you can see it, you're going to question it.
That's really interesting perspective.
With something we know as videographers.
Right. You know, if it's not in the scene, it didn't happen type of thing in video.
Good video is better audio.
Something like that, true, too. Yeah. Your audio is good, but your video is terrible.
People will accept a marginal picture as long as they can hear what's going on.
Mm-hmm. But what's interesting about that comment is that when you look at someone talking and they put their body language with it, they can say one thing and they mean another, mm-hmm. and you will get the meta message correct because of body language, or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
Body language may be one way, but the tone of voice is another way. This is one reason I like radio. I can, you know, have a bad hair day and nobody cares what I look like.
Mm-hmm.
It's all a voice medium.
Why I like being a technician.
Why, it's why text messages need a sarcasm font.
Yeah.
There is a snark mark. So there's a question mark. I use it, but with people who understand, mostly my writing club. But there's the question mark, which is the period with the little
right.
And I'm going to go Victor Borga on you here. But exclamation mark, which is the period with the swoosh on top. And then the snark mark is the period with the tilde.
Period with a tilde.
I'll have to
That's the snark mark.
For those of you who...
Does that mean you're being sarcastic or cynical or whatever?
Yeah. It was like, oh, yay, we get to see that movie again.
Yeah, sarcasm.
Snark mark.
Where do you see all this? Just in my professional career.
Mm-hmm.
Which is rather lengthy.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, it spans quite a spectrum in the industry there.
Well, as a matter of fact, I just put up, I'm selling off some old stuff, and one of the pieces mm-hmm. I talked about earlier was this VTR, videotape record. This is before Beta and VHS. that was 40-some-odd years ago, the standard. Now we're shooting stuff on our smartphones,
mm-hmm.
and it can instantly go out to the entire world. Where does, you know, I'm trying to imagine by the time, God forbid.
I'm your age.
Yeah, I was trying to put that delicately.
I'm not a delicate person.
Yeah. if we're all still here, or if the world is still here, where will this stuff have gone? I don't see any major, major breakthroughs, but people said that back in the 70s. Everything that could be invented was invented, you know?
Short-sighted.
Yeah.
And look at the expansion of computer capabilities. You were just talking about a micro SD card that can, mm-hmm. has what, 400 gigabytes?
400 gigabytes.
On a micro SD card.
It's the size of your fingernail.
Yeah, that just kills me.
If you want to, statistically speaking, historically speaking, if you want to look at what the future holds, look at fiction.
Yep.
This thing in my hand, I use it to communicate with people. I use it to scan things. I use it to...
No, that's an iPhone.
Yes.
Yeah.
Smartphone.
It's a tricorder.
Exactly.
I call mine the communicator.
Yeah.
Not my smartphone.
We already passed up the flip phone.
It is a tricorder.
Yeah, it's a tricorder.
That. Yeah.
So it's the age-old question, does life imitate art or art imitate life? In when it comes to technology in the future, life starts imitating art because the people who grew up watching Star Trek are now the inventors going, I want a lightsaber.
Yeah.
And so a holodeck would be next to answer your question. We've already got the VR. We've already got some of the glass glass floors and all of that.
We already have lasers.
We can do a lot of that. Most of the interactions with, like, the Iron Man or the Avatar with the 3D interaction,
mm-hmm.
It's cool, and it looks cool on screen.
Tony Stark waving out the virtual...
It's not a very effective graphic user interface, but it's fun.
Brenda discovered this at CES a few years ago. It was a gesture-based control system, and your arms get tired.
It was exhausting. Physically exhausting.
Well,
it opened to a lot of misinterpretation, and I've noticed that has not continued to be a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you don't see that technology being used. It's voice command. But after all, how do we communicate?
Voice plus gesture. Now, we've discovered how hilariously funny it can be to have your voice commands misunderstood.
Well, mm-hmm. that's true.
The A lady frequently gets it wrong.
Something. A handful of my friends are deaf. I sign. And so that's something that's interesting for me as far as the physicality capturing and how the technology is moving forward there is that... Google Translate can take Arabic, and I had a whole full-on conversation with a guy in Arabic. I do not know Arabic, but I know Google Translate. And so I was able to have this conversation. Sign language isn't one of those things yet. And so, but it can be with the physical capture if we get precise enough on that.
Right.
I actually was using Google Translate. There was a book in a store that originally was a Japanese radar log from a ship. And so I said, okay, I got to figure out what this is saying.
It was written in English and Japanese.
Yeah, but
just it said certain parts
of
it.
The captions were in English, but the text below was in Japanese. So I loaded up the Japanese set into Google Translate, held my phone over it, and what's really neat is that it superimposes the translation over the top of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty darn close.
Yeah.
There's really interesting stuff. The it'll be interesting to see, well, back to Star Trek, the Universal Translator.
Mm-hmm.
It's the whole thing.
Or the Babel fish or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Or a corneal overlay that gives you a HUD.
Yeah.
Heads up this way.
I don't want something in my ear, though.
Especially if it's a fish.
Yeah,
the Babel fish.
It excretes the English or whatever.
Yeah. That just does not sound pleasant.
Well, and English and language is linear, except for sign language. Sign language is three-dimensional, but most language is linear. And so as we start talking about aliens and completely foreign languages that we have no frame of reference for, something is going to have to change as far as language is concerned, because the way we look at language is often, in English at least, one letter after another, and it goes down a line or it comes, flows forward, backward, whatever.
Didn't they touch on that in that film, Contact? Contact?
Arrival?
They have
Arrival.
Whatever.
One of them.
Yes, but how we understand language is going to have to shift as
Arrival.
Soon as... And so that's one of my favorite things about sign language is that it's three-dimensional, but it doesn't have a written language. It's whatever their equivalent is. They will be able to write in English and sign, which they are two different two different languages entirely.
Right. One being three-dimensional and one being
linear.
There was a podcast. In fact, we were just pulling into a parking lot and we had it turned off there. They were talking about sign language. Remember that? American Sign Language? Hmm. Anyway, it was interesting about and how the brain has to shift gears between those two methods of communication.
Kind of think of it like dual booting, if we're going to get back to the whole tech thing. And, language is the operating system the brain works on.
Language is the operating system of the brain, yes.
And so if you have different languages and different cultures and associations attached to it, then you're going to be able to dual boot.
Oh, yeah. They were talking about people that grow up bilingual, for instance, or have more than one language, proficient in more than one language, how they have to shift gears mentally
and
to get to that. Yeah, I remember that.
That's something when I start working with an author, that's something I almost always address with them, is think in your other language if you're looking for the right word.
Ashley, somebody wants to contact you about if they have a finished manuscript and they want to pursue that dream, how do they get hold of you?
Probably the best way is my email address, l.esses@aspenhousepublishing.com. And then we can get a communication going, and I can possibly even edit a small portion of your manuscript, see if it's something you like, and then we can continue from there.
More Boomer Tech Radio King coming up after SRN News at the top of the hour. We'll be back. It might be the car or light truck that gets you to your job every day. Maybe your child drives it to school. Or perhaps your drivers deliver goods to the customers who keep your business going. The bottom line is, you rely heavily on that vehicle to be safe and reliable day after day, and that means regular maintenance by professionals trained in the latest automotive repair techniques. For Brenda and myself, that means Advanced Automotive is the only repair shop we trust with our personal vehicles. Advanced Automotive does everything they can to make car care easy. Founded in 1993 by Tim Morlock and now owned by his son Cody, carrying on a tradition of honest work at a fair price. Find out for yourself by visiting advancedautoreading.com
or go to RepairPal.com, or you could just call 530-244-4423. It's a great little repair shop that's a bit hard to find, but worth the effort, at 5756 F West Side Road in Reading. Advanced Automotive.
You're listening to KCNR 1460, community talk radio for the North State. This is KCNR, Shasta, Reading.
.com. I'm Ron DeRostra. The confirmed death toll has reached 384 after a powerful earthquake triggered a tsunami that crashed in the Indonesian island of Sulawesi.
That's the sound of a tsunami blasting through low-standing bayside buildings in the city of Palu, Indonesia. A magnitude 7.5 earthquake struck at dusk Friday, setting off the tsunami that sent waves up to 20 feet high into the capital of central Sulawesi province. Hundreds of people had been attending a beach festival when the tsunami struck. As the death toll climbed, initial figures were only being reported from Palu, and the country's disaster agency warned that the toll would likely rise once rescuers are able to reach other coastal communities where communications have been cut off. I'm Ben Thomas.
A Virginia man who prosecutors say left a voicemail threatening to kill then-Governor Terry McAuliffe has been sentenced to 5 years in prison. The 48-year-old pleaded guilty Friday to two charges of threatening McAuliffe or his family, as well as weapons charges. A prosecutor says he apologized during the court hearing. A federal judge says a group of nearly 200 Democratic lawmakers have legal standing to sue President Trump.
For the second time, a federal court has given the green light for a constitutional lawsuit against the president. Judge Emmett Sullivan says Democrats in Congress have legal standing to prove that Mr. Trump violated the U.S. Constitution's emoluments provision banning the acceptance of gifts from foreign interests. This week's ruling follows an earlier ruling in Maryland in a similar lawsuit, but it only covered the president's earnings from his hotel in Washington. Greg Clugston, the White House.
The airline operating a flight that crashed into a Pacific lagoon in Micronesia Friday now says one man is missing after earlier saying all 47 passengers and crew were safe. News and analysis, townhall.com.
Pat Boone here again, and I assure you, I have never before endorsed a pain relief product. Not until now. Not until Relief Factor came along as a 100% drug-free solution for people struggling with ordinary pain. Quite simply, Relief Factor was designed by doctors to help relieve those occasional aches and pains due to aging, exercise, and everyday living. Let me ask you, are aches and pains keeping you from sleeping through the night? Or keeping you from taking those nice long walks or playing golf or tennis? You can't really call it living if you can't get around comfortably. The 3-week quick start from Relief Factor may be all you need to lower or even eliminate these pains. A whole lot of people have already gone to ReliefFactor.com, and here's something you need to know. The majority of people who order the 3-week quick start, now only $19.95, go on to order more. Let's see if we can get you out of pain too. Go to ReliefFactor.com.
Syria demands the withdrawal of foreign troops, including the U.S., from its country immediately, while inviting refugees back with the promise of the war being near an end.
Syrian Foreign Minister Walid al-Mualim, through a translator, told world leaders meeting at the United Nations that countries which did not support Bashar al-Assad's government needed to get out of Syria.
Occupying forces and will be dealt with accordingly.
That would not be welcome to take part in rebuilding Syria.
It is high time for all those detached from reality to wake up, let go of their fantasies, and come to their senses.
He also vehemently restates his denials that his country used chemical weapons during the war, although international investigators found otherwise. Julie Walker, New York.
Breaking news and analysis at townhall.com. California courts could be going to the dogs, maybe the cats, too.
Until now, Fido and Kitty have been considered family property, a status giving them little more standing in a divorce than a family's big-screen TV. But under a new law granting judges authority to settle disagreements over who keeps the family pet in divorce cases, a bill signed by Governor Jerry Brown says pets will still be considered community property, but a judge deciding who gets to keep them will have the discretion of weighing such factors as who feeds them, who takes them to the vet and on walks, and who protects them. Patrick Frost reporting.
California told lawmakers Friday they must still comply with the state's strict vehicle mileage standards, even if President Trump also rolls back federal rules. The action by the California Air Resources Board was widely expected. It sets up a likely court battle if the Trump administration follows through with an attempt to revoke California's unique authority. More on these stories at townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra.
Ever since we started Boomer Tech Radio, Advanced Automotive has been part of our program. But Tim and Cody Morlock are more than just our advertisers. They're our friends, and they are our first choice when we have our personal vehicles serviced. Why? Well, because after your home, your car is probably your second biggest investment, and it's vital that it be safe and dependable. Advanced Automotive has a skilled staff of certified technicians ready to diagnose your vehicle and get it running right. Advanced Automotive is listed on RepairPal.com, a national rating site where customers can leave reviews and even get an estimate on the cost of a repair. Go where the professionals take their vehicles to be serviced. Advanced Automotive in Redding, on the web at AdvancedAutoRedding.com. Visit them at 5756 F Westside Road, just off Bonneville. Call them at 530-244-4423. Advanced Automotive.
Welcome back. This is Boomer Tech Radio, Hour 2. I'm still Bob Belongi.
And I'm Brenda Belongi.
Speaking slightly slower this time out.
The caffeine worn off here. My God, I didn't remember who lit your tail off last hour.
Oh, goodness me. Hey, welcome back. And, of course, we are sponsored by Boomer Tech Radio. We're sponsored by Advanced Automotive of Reading. Safe, reliable car care for their customers and our community. 5756 F Westside Road in Reading. 530-244-4423, as it has been for the past 10 years. And they've been a staunch supporter of this program.
Well, their phone number's been there longer than that, but yeah, for us. Yeah. On Boomer
as
Tech
we
Radio.
Have been saying
as
for the
we
past
have been
10
saying
years.
For the past 10 years, yes.
Well. How about this? Facebook has disclosed that hackers took data from 50 million people on Friday. There was a blog post. The vice president of product management says the company's engineering team, we found it a security issue.
Oopsie.
Apparently this was a vulnerability in the Facebook code that
stemmed from the view as feature.
Which means you can look at your page and see it the way that other people see it. Now, I'm not sure that allowed people to steal the access tokens, but then, so this is how the bad guys have been hijacking accounts, apparently. And all of a sudden, your best friend starts sending you these weird messages. As we've talked about, you'll get the message of, hey, how you doing? I got one from a coworker, and it was this very oddly stilted text message. And the upshot was I was supposed to click on the link and collect some free money.
Yeah, right.
Red flag.
Yeah, no kidding. It's not even in that person's style. It's like the old one of, I'm in the Philippines and I lost my wallet. And, that's funny. I talked to you an hour ago. You know, there's no way you'd get to the Philippines in an hour. And the one person I got that from, that was definitely not their writing style. So it's interesting.
The Zuck says it's all under control.
Right.
CEO Mark is talking to reporters saying that the investigation has not indicated if hackers got into private messages or changed any information. Hackers did apparently try to get into private information, but we don't know yet if anything was actually taken, company resetting the access token, so you may not be able to get into your Facebook without having to relog.
So 90 million people are not going to have to log back into Facebook or any of their apps that use Facebook as a login. Now, I don't know how many people are on Facebook.
A lot of people use their Facebook ID to log into other accounts.
Why would you do that?
Yeah.
I don't, that's something that just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. The thing is, I'm going to look this up. I'm going to go out here on Google. How many people are on Facebook, because what does 90 million represent in terms of their, you know, what does 90 million people represent in terms of their overall thing? So it says here in the Facebook newsroom that a billion people are active on Facebook. 100 million use Instagram. Of course, Facebook owns Instagram. Yeah. And so, you know, what's 90 million out of 1 billion?
According to what I read, it's about 2.5% of the entire user base.
Yeah, so it's a very, very small percentage. Although, if that's you,
yeah, if
it feels huge,
right?
Yeah, if you're the one that's compromised, that feels huge. But still, it's not very many. So it's not like it's a systemic thing. It's a systemic thing in that they got in that way, but it's not widespread, if you will, for all the users that are on there.
Now, this did not cause any great delay in the first lawsuit. Facebook was sued by users over claims it negligently allowed hackers to get into those 50 million accounts. The class action suit filed Friday in federal court in Northern California. I'm going to presume that means San Francisco,
yeah.
where the lawsuit is, of course, a way of life. Within hours of Facebook's statement that they had fixed the breach, this, of course, is the latest in a series of problems that is definitely undermining Facebook and threatening to send it the way of MySpace.
Well, let's see. First, it's Experian? No, one of the credit companies.
Oh yeah, it was.
Had their.
Was it? I thought it was. It was Equifax.
Equifax. There we go. I had the wrong E there, but yeah. So we keep saying on this show, it's not a matter of if, it's a when, because all of these seem to have vulnerabilities that hackers get into, and you know whatever they're looking for PII, personally identifiable information, maybe that is going to say something about you, so they can go establish some artificial credit or something in your name. That's not so good, and commit some kind of crime or fraud or. Create an identity.
Raise havoc.
Or it's like, yeah, mayhem, and so to speak, but a virtual mayhem. Mm. So, you know, it's you just kind of have to assume if you have any kind of online presence that your stuff's going to be stolen at some point.
So the term makes sense. Jackpotting. And what jackpotting is you manage to get some and ATMs are pretty robust machines. They're designed to keep the money pretty secure. But apparently there's a way of getting malware into certain ATMs, and the devices spit out all their cash. A gentleman who managed to get over $63,000 from one machine.
Wow.
I don't know what the average ATM holds inside.
That's
kind of
interesting.
That,
$63,000 in one machine.
Yeah. One of the men involved in a jackpotting scheme is already up for punishment. He's only getting a year in U.S. prison. 2 years of supervised release, but he does have to give back $121,000. Doesn't say how this was accomplished. And, of course, this is probably not something that they want to particularly mention.
Advertise.
Apparently you enter certain codes and you get into the machine's diagnostic routines.
Right.
Is my guess.
So, there's they don't really talk about this, but.
It says it was a malware called Plotus.
Right. And how you get it in there is an interesting question. Maybe you feed a card into the reader. I don't know. Something like that. Jackpotting has been a big problem in Asia, Europe, and Mexico. Not so much here in the U.S., but it's now here in the U.S. And we'll see how that goes. The perpetrator in this case is a Spanish citizen and actually did plead guilty to his nefarious activities. Mm. And used a variant of Plotus. And it's a kind of jackpotting malware that's been available in numerous forms since about 2013. So there's no special tools. The crack, the American machines, they're not unlike the rest of them around.
Yeah, yeah.
So
There's only a few basic brands. By the way, some years ago, there was a thing that happened where a couple of guys were seen rolling an ATM into a shopping mall. Well, if you see people rolling an ATM out of a shopping mall, you might think about it.
Right.
But when you see a couple of guys in coveralls rolling a machine in, setting it in place and plugging it in, it's, oh, okay, some, oh, looky there, there's a new ATM. This is why I won't use an ATM in a convenience store. What this thing was doing was reading your card, getting your PIN, and then saying, sorry, this machine is out of service.
Uh-huh.
And then meanwhile was dumping that information back to the mothership. And then in this particular instance, it managed to harvest well over 300 cards in a single afternoon before authorities caught on to the fact that this machine wasn't supposed to be there. Oh, dear me.
So,
the imagination of the criminal mind.
Absolutely. And speaking of the criminal mind, you may recall that several episodes of Boomer Tech prior to this, we talked about a couple instances where Apple stores were being burglarized, if you will, in broad daylight.
Very brazen
thieves. Thieves would walk in the door and just grab stuff and go. It wasn't even a smash and grab. They just walk in the door and grab. Well, they've been caught.
Yes, well, they tell the geniuses, of course, don't interfere, don't get hurt or anything, as is the case in many stores where criminals now just walk in, help themselves, and walk out, and all the police can do is come take the report, because if you touch these people, they'll turn around and sue you. But, yeah, these groups would go in one case got more than $20,000 worth of Apple products, because these are functional products that are on the shelves.
Right.
Now, what's odd, of course, is that the iPhones and tablets are keyed in such a way that if they are removed from the premises, they're serialized and they are inoperative, but they're either being stripped for parts or being sold to unsuspecting hey, dude, want an iPhone for $100?
It's like...
then the minute you boot it up, the cops show up outside your door.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, speaking of the cops, three men that were involved in this whole kind of heist scheme got identified because the police ended up pursuing them in a vehicle chase. And they got caught after they crashed their vehicle twice and then attempted to run after the car apparently wouldn't go any further. So
apparently they were better thieves than they were drivers.
Yeah, car drivers. So
saw one too many episodes of The Fast and the Furious.
Something like that, right? So anyway, the arrest of those people led to identifying a 17 member ring, that theft ring that was in this. And it's like, and I wondered about this because, like, really, ultimately you're going to get caught because either you're going to get caught in the act, something's going to go wrong, or people in the store are going to say, oh, I've heard about you people, and I'm tired of you type of thing, or some random something would happen. And that's kind of the case in this particular case, where they got caught in a car chase, and that did not end well.
No.
It was not in their favor.
Pretty
interesting.
Where does the storage war end?
Oh, my gosh.
Now, when we started this program, the standard SD card. In fact, there were like 15 different storage cards on the market. Remember that? All different formats. Most of them were 1 or 2 gigabyte sizes. We had a Kodak camera that took up to a 2 gigabyte card.
Hey, remember when a 512
USB stick?
USB stick, that was meg.
Yeah.
512 megabytes.
Yep.
Was big stuff.
That was very big stuff. The prices just keep – it was a big deal, and this kind of technology is what's going to make your next hard drive obsolete, the spinning hard drive. In fact, some companies have already stopped making spinning hard drives because the writing is on the wall, or actually the writing is on the card, that these things – the mechanical spinning hard drive is on its way out. And things like this, SanDisk last year brought out a 400 gigabyte micro SD card. Now, that's the one that if you look at your fingernail, it's about that big. It's what goes into your smartphone or your tablet, not to be confused with the SIM card, although it is a very similar size.
Right.
But 400 gigabytes. The card originally sold for $249.
It's about the size of your little fingernail, not your thumbnail. your little fingernail.
400 gig. On Amazon, you were able to buy it, as of this recording, you may want to check Amazon, see if it's still available, $99 for that card. And that's pretty amazing.
Just a year ago, or sometime last year, I guess, I don't know if it was a year ago, but sometime in 2017, you would pay $250 for the same thing. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of storage.
If you're shooting video, video cards can video rated cards can be notoriously expensive. But again, the price factor, this is what I call the calculator effect. Of course, is that they as they manufacture more and more and more, the price goes into a free fall. SanDisk's Extreme Pro SD cards; these are the ones you would use for shooting high quality video. 128 gigs at about $39, and the 256. Selling for about $89. Now, it would actually make more sense to buy two of the 128s if you can swap them out. And a 128 gig SD card will shoot about an hour's worth of high definition video. That's pretty good. That's about, you know, that's about by contrast, I mentioned last hour about that old school video tape recorder would shoot 20 minutes onto a 5-inch reel of tape. And the thing weighed 40-some-odd pounds. So it's amazing. The storage sale on Amazon, if you may want to check back, see if the sale is still going on.
It's interesting. I'm looking currently, and the best I can see is $135.
G-Tech is selling an 8-terabyte solid-state drive. Plugs into your USB-C and costs just $204. $205.
128 gig SanDisk Ultra on Amazon is going for just over $26.
Now that may not be the super. Gig. Yeah, yeah. Is that the Extreme Pro? Because there's different speeds, of course.
Well, it just says Ultra on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. The Ultra is good for your tablet or your smartphone. But not if you're shooting high definition video.
No, I did not know this, that there were different
different classes of write speed
stuff. Yeah, here's a 512 gig micro SD card done by PNY.
Mm-hmm. That's a major brand.
Yep, that one's $350. They call that an elite. There's a whole bunch of symbols on these cards that obviously have something to do with that. So, does it specify in the article what one it which flavor it's looking at, whether it's the Elite or Ultra or what have you?
Yeah, well, they talk about the Ultras, which is actually their general purpose ones.
General purpose one.
Yeah, the thing is the reliability of the write speed to get the high definition video onto the card, and I have personally experienced. Stuttering playback because I didn't have a fast enough card in my SD recorder.
Okay, so here is a secure digital memory card. Maybe that's a different kind of thing, but it's only 512 meg and it's $12.
That's pretty good. Yeah, now that's full postage stamp size guy.
Yeah.
But that's the old SD card.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is why would you ever buy a 512 megabyte for $12 when you can get these other ones that are
older equipment cannot address
the big
the gigabyte size cards.
That's
so
true.
You need to look at what your equipment can handle, and that's usually in your documentation. Because
so very good point.
Older phones and tablets and camera devices cannot function with those newer cards. They can only use a fraction of the size.
So herein lies the point. It's sort of like going to get ink for your printer or, parts for anything. You got to make sure that it fits with what your system is compatible with, mm-hmm. or it's compatible with your system. It doesn't do any good to put a Ferrari in there when, you know, your things only move at course and cart pace, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like memory in a computer. It has to be compatible with the computer. To make sure that it'll work well. So I had not thought about that in SD cards. I thought all SD cards were the same, but obviously they're not.
No, they come in different speed sizes.
Different speed sizes, yeah, just like a lot of other things.
But looking back, now I mentioned about that old video recorder, another technology that came out of the 1970s was, of course, the original Apple computer, built by Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak in their garage. And there was a shop called the Byte Shop in Mountain View, California, which is now pretty much the heart of Silicon Valley. At the time this computer was built, it was a lot of orchards. They sold it for $666.66, which was a pretty fair chunk of change in the 1970s.
Yeah, but 666.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
That was probably designed to tweak some people.
Yes,
yeah.
It probably was.
Only 70 are known to still exist in the world, and one of those original Apples sold at auction for $375,000. That's more than 562 times the original sale price.
If you had one and you hung on to it, that'd be a good investment.
Put another way, had the original buyer held on to that system for the 40 years and then sold it for the auction price, that would be a return on investment of over 56,000%.
All investments could do that. But, you know, you had to wait. How many years, right?
Now, this particular Apple One was particularly special because it was actually still working.
Oh, my gosh.
It was restored to original condition before the auction, a demo of it running its software. This computer, part of an online auction that included other Apple memorabilia, like a signed annual report, signed by Steve Jobs, his very own self. Jobs and Wozniak produced only about 200 of the original Apple computers. Every so often, one will show up at auction. The most that's ever been paid for one was $750,000. And your machine has a whopping 8K of RAM. 8 kilobytes of RAM.
But as I recall,
and no storage. You had to type in all of your program on the spot. Or if you were really well to do, you had a cassette recorder.
Oh, dang me.
To load your program on.
Uptown, right?
Yeah.
As I recall, each one of those, though, was hand built by them.
Yeah.
They it wasn't a factory production or anything like that.
Well, they were having their main boards laid out, and yeah, they would do the assembly of the pieces.
Yeah, they did that. So, you know, that's a piece of history. It's like, think about this. These guys actually touched the thing, you know. Yeah. Some people like that part of history.
8 kilobytes. Meanwhile,
ooh, man, fancy.
1 terabyte is the size of the treasure trove of information that Australian hacker pulled off of Apple's servers a few months ago. Remember, we talked about that story. Originally, I thought he got about 90 gigs worth of secure files, but the teenager during the penalty phase of the trial, it was revealed that he had to give back over a terabyte of the sensitive information the investigators managed to recover. The teenager and a second younger boy had modified and copied a large volume of data that was basically Apple's proprietary information. Apple says no personal data was compromised. Of course they would say that. The company said following the disclosure of the hack, in this case, our teams discovered the unauthorized access and reported the incident to law enforcement. But this kid managed to hack into what had to be some of the most secure servers outside of any military organization on the planet.
Yep.
Apple, come on. This kid's got a job for him when he gets out of jail. Somebody will be after this. Kapersky or somebody will hire this kid.
Well, you know, sometimes what's obvious to adults is not. Is overlooked because, you know, well, nobody would do it that way, or nobody, you know, they just don't see things the way people who aren't don't grow up with it do. See vulnerabilities that other people can't.
Would you like to play a game?
Yeah.
If you watch what was the Matthew Broderick and he hacks into War Games, which was a pretty scary movie in its time. Now it's almost laughable, but that's one of the the kid actually hacks into NORAD's servers and almost triggers World War.
Right.
But I think they called the machine the Whopper. And it was this great big box with the blinky lights on it and all that. But still an interesting movie. Because we have turned more and more. We haven't turned over, to my knowledge, all of our nuclear missiles over to one system. That would be a pretty bad idea.
Yeah, single point of failure, that's not good with that sort
of thing. There we go. But, hey, we're going to be back with one more segment of Boomer Tech Radio. And including a story that something that is really peeving me these days every time my phone rings and I don't recognize the number. Bloomer Tech, more after this. It's a given that your car or light truck is going to need service sooner or later, and often, waiting until later means a lot bigger repair bill. Now, there are many repair shops in town, so it pays to do your research and find out where your friends and neighbors take their vehicles and check reviews online as well. Advanced Automotive of Reading is listed on RepairPal.com, where customers just like you talk about their experience. Advanced Auto has been making quality auto care easy since 1993 and has a philosophy of keeping things simple. Stop by their shop at 5756 F West Side Road just off Bonneview. You'll see vehicles from local businesses and first responders in the yard because those customers rely on cars and trucks that are safe and reliable. But more than that, safe vehicles mean a safer community. And honestly, it's the right way to do business. Check them out for yourself. Advanced Automotive, 5756 F West Side Road in Reading, 244-4423.
The annual Reading East Rotary Ducky Derby is coming September 30th at Reading's Caldwell Park. Be a part of the Reading East Rotary's effort to keep our kids drug and alcohol free. First prize is a 16-sleeper houseboat vacation from Shasta Marina, valued at $2,700. Details on all the other amazing prizes, sponsor, or ticket information go to readingduckyderby.com or call 225-8583. The 29th Annual Ducky Derby, September 30th in Caldwell Park. Get your tickets today. Brought to you by KCNR 1460 AM.
That doesn't happen to men.
It's not just a woman's issue.
It only happened once.
I will intervene.
But he's such a nice guy.
We will look out for each other.
What did she think would happen?
I will step in.
It's just the way people are.
It's on us to change the future for our children.
We will change the culture.
Get involved. One safe place. OSPShasta.org/change the culture.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
Hey, you getting hungry?
Yeah, hungry as a bear.
Oh, yes, the eternal question. What's for lunch?
Fast food?
Nah, I want something that didn't come in a bag.
Someplace fancy.
No, I want a place that has a down-home atmosphere, serves good portions, and has consistently good food.
My friend, you just described Black Bear Diner. They started just up the road in Mount Shasta. They have carried that feeling of home-cooked meals at a great price to more than 100 locations.
They're on Hilltop Drive in Reading.
Arr.
What's that?
It's time to feed the inner bear.
Black Bear Diner.
Purpose-driven banking. That's the vision behind the founding of Five Star Bank in 1999. Services inspired by partnership and defined by shared vision and goals. Five Star Bank, a champion of local economic development and community stewardship. Your success is their success. Now that's smart people doing good business. In a world that's both more connected and more isolated by high tech, Five Star Bank brings you a personal touch to small business banking, cash management, and online services. Five Star Bank, consistently rated among the very best by industry associations, rating agencies, and of course, customers and partners just like you. Your partner in success is Five Star Bank. FiveStarBank.com. Visit your local branch at 358 Hartnell in Reading. Progressive, professional, personal. That's Five Star Bank. Equal Housing Lender, member FDIC. It might be the car or light truck that gets you to your job every day. Maybe your child drives it to school. Or perhaps your drivers deliver goods to the customers who keep your business going. The bottom line is, you rely heavily on that vehicle to be safe and reliable day after day, and that means regular maintenance by professionals trained in the latest automotive repair techniques.
For Brenda and myself, that means Advanced Automotive is the only repair shop we trust with our personal vehicles. Advanced Automotive does everything they can to make car care easy. Founded in 1993 by Tim Morlock and now owned by his son Cody, carrying on a tradition of honest work at a fair price. Find out for yourself by visiting AdvancedAutoReading.com or go to RepairPal.com, or you could just call 530-244-4423. It's a great little repair shop that's a bit hard to find, but worth the effort, at 5756 F West Side Road in Reading. Advanced Automotive. Every weekend, Boomer Tech Radio brings you goodies, gadgets, gizmos, tech news you can use. And, of course, we want to thank our sponsors there at Advanced Automotive of Reading. Safe, reliable car care for the customers and our community. And the catchy little theme music that you hear is George Wood's 8-Bit Junkie. And it is being used by permission. You got permission from the man in his very own self. Something that we have had to put up with more and more, especially as the political season rolls up now, of course, is robocalls.
Ugh.
And you're getting them now on your cell phone. And the numbers look like a look. You know, you can ignore all the 800 numbers, or I don't know anybody in Nebraska. I'm going to ignore this call.
Right.
But you get a call on your phone that looks to be from somebody right across town.
Right.
So you answer it, and do not hang up. Your Google listing is in danger.
Or thank you for, you know, choosing Costco or something.
Oh, that's, yeah.
Costco one is really annoying.
Congratulations.
Yeah, that's right.
To a loyal Costco man. And Costco wants nothing to do with it.
One I got today was in a language that was completely incomprehensible to me. And no, it wasn't Spanish.
Mm.
So it's like, what? Why are you calling my number? Because, you know, it'd be nice if you spoke English. Then I might have some hope of understanding you and telling you to take my number off your list.
The FCC is about to slap a $37.5 million fine on a company for making spoofed telemarketing calls. The company is called Affordable Enterprises of Arizona.
Right.
I hope they can afford $37 million.
Yeah, no kidding.
They made over 2.3 million calls over the course of 14 months, masking their own number with those of consumers in the area. FCC says it's the first major action taken against a company involved in that practice. The commission has issued robocalls before. But one woman whose number was, now this is the thing, they take phone numbers that belong to people and present that as their number. Well, who's going to get the complaint call?
Is the person who owns the number.
Yeah. She was getting one woman said she was getting over 5 calls a day from others complaining about the telemarketing calls that seemed to come from her number. That's pretty chicken poo right there. Robocalls, of course, becoming increasingly prevalent. FCC has made effort. California has made effort. Service providers trying to figure out, but so far nobody has managed to stick their finger into the flood of these stupid calls. And what amazes me is that they wouldn't be doing them if at least some of them didn't work.
That's what gets me is I just don't get it. It's like shooting a shotgun. A pellet's going to knock off something.
If you fire enough shotgun rounds in the air, a bird will fall down sooner or later.
Exactly. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, but it's just terribly annoying.
I think everybody complains about it.
And there seems to be no relief in sight. Okay, this makes me crazy when I see this. Coming to us from the Next Web. Of course, all of our stories here on Boomer Tech Radio come to us courtesy of Flipboard. We curate our own magazine of Flipboard and borrow topics from different sources. Does it freak you out when you go to the gas station and there's some idiot on the next pump who lights up a smoke?
Well, you have to wonder what their brain
power is. What are you thinking about?
Yeah, obviously you're thinking about nothing.
Bear in mind that a lit cigarette burns at about 600 degrees C. That's over 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. And gasoline lights off at about half of that. People smoke while pumping gas.
Microsoft has developed an AI-powered alarm system to help gas station employees crack down on the offenders.
A fire hose comes to mind.
This is a great paragraph in this story on the next. It's difficult to imagine the amount of idiotic hubris it takes to disregard basic thermodynamics. But some people simply won't be bothered by certain doom. These people are called smokers.
That's exactly what the article says.
Shell is apparently installing these systems that if the AI detects a person lighting up, which should be pretty easy. I mean, it's going to be a heck of a heat flare. It alerts the attendants who presumably can either turn off the pump or head out there with a fire extinguisher ready to go.
I'm surprised it doesn't just shut off the pump.
Yeah, that would make the robust AI... determines if an alarm should be sounded. Microsoft isn't specific about the alarm, but hopefully it's something like a couple of quotes from Samuel L. Jackson. But
I don't know why this is so funny, but it's funny.
Yeah.
It's written quite well. It's a very sarcastic article.
So what's different about this system is that it uses a simple algorithm to detect if smoking is happening, sends those specific frames to the cloud, and then that's where the determination is made. Is this a situation that requires an alarm so you don't get a lot of false alarms?
Well, yeah. I'm surprised they don't use some sort of, smoke detector, if you will.
Well, in addition some kind of to heat that, detector.
Well, there's that, too.
That would be an expense. This can simply use a television camera that picks up the images.
True.
You've probably got a camera there already.
True enough.
But come on, people.
As the article says, it's an elegant solution to a problem that shouldn't exist.
Give me a break.
You know, when you go to Oregon, they pump your gas. You cannot pump your own gas there. And so maybe that's one way that system is there. I don't think I see too many people smoking at the pumps in Oregon. Is there's a person there telling you to knock it off?
Yeah.
If you get spotted doing that or attempting to do that. just like the way the article was written.
A new paper published by Princeton University has put forth some disturbing ideas, according to Gizmodo. One of the main theories is that Facebook has been tricking you into thinking that two-factor authentication, you know, where you give them your phone number and when you go to log in, they send you a code, was just for your security. No, it's not. So they can assign a phone number to a person, and that's why you're getting all these damn robocalls on your smartphone.
Probably they're selling that list to somebody and making some money off of the deal.
Paper titled Investigating Sources of PII, Personally Identifiable Information, Using Facebook's Targeted Advertising. Turns out that Facebook is compiling what people call a shadow profile for everybody, which is how they can serve these very targeted ads to you, and also knowing all your whereabouts. And researchers found that when a user gives Facebook that phone number in order to receive alerts, that phone number becomes targetable by an advertiser within a couple of weeks. This is going to hammer on Facebook even more.
Probably.
In my opinion.
Yep. It's interesting. So, have you ever been to the national park or popular recreation site and there's all these signs that say stay on the trail, don't go off the trail, and all this stuff. And
this is especially true Yellowstone, where you can fall into the
area. Well, definitely some very dangerous areas. Or area closed for rehabilitation.
Yeah, yeah.
Because some clowns can't stay on the trail. And so this has kind of happened in the drone world where... there hasn't been a lot of regulation for hobbyists.
It's been sort of a wild west.
A bit. And yet, because there has been some significant abuse of that, or at least perceived abuse, now there's going to be some rules and crackdowns. So it's the whole thing is these idiots that are out there, and there are very few. There's probably not the majority of the recreational drone users. They're out there flying around other aircraft. During wildfires comes to mind, there have been a significant number of events this year where air operations have been halted upon wildfire incidents because of drones. it shuts the whole air show down. This is for the safety of the aerial operations and the firefighters, and probably for the drone itself, although these aren't manned drones, of course. That would not be a drone if it was that way. But so there is a bill, federal Congress, it's close to passage, that would limit recreational drone flying to no more than 400 feet off the ground, I believe, is what they mean here. And they have to stay way, way clear of traditional aircraft. So
yeah, they're probably going to strengthen those circles. Right now, it is illegal to fly a drone within, I think, 5 miles of an active airport. Most people ignore this, but I think the FAA is going to put some teeth into these regulations now.
Well, they may require anybody who gets a drone, they have to do more education and licensing and things like that. So drones are being, you know, used in an increasing number of things, building inspections, and they have a definite use during natural disasters and stuff. And I don't think that's what they're talking about. These are not – those are commercial drones. Those are not recreational types. And, you know, yet the purchase of drones is, you know, quite active. I mean, people, there's a lot of them being sold.
You can go over to Best Buy and get a pretty darn big drone.
And of course, there's
for a few thousand bucks.
There's an element. Well, the FAA estimates that over 1.5 million drones will be sold this year in the U.S. And so there's a bunch of folks, of course, that think that they should be able to fly them with, you know,
absolute
no restrictions.
Impunity, yeah.
Yeah, wherever, whenever, however they want. And, you know, it's. That's just not realistic. It's sort of like, you know, you can't have it hovering over the neighborhood looking at everything and that sort of thing.
Yeah, you can't have it sitting there looking at your bikini-clad daughter or not bikini-clad daughter.
That's the case, maybe, right.
But on the other hand, you report it to law enforcement. You don't go out there with the trusty Sears and Roebuck 12-gauge and blow it out of the sky.
Right,
because
that's a whole other thing.
That opens up a whole other can of worms. It is, in fact, yes, it's illegal for that drone to hover there and look at your daughter. It's also illegal to blow it out of the air because you are destroying an aircraft. And the FCC takes a dim view of that.
Well, and there's some groups that say, well, we're not the problem. And it's like, yes, you probably are not the problem. But because some people just can't help themselves and are a problem, it ruins it for everybody. Hence, stay off the trail. Stay on the trail. This area is closed for rehab because some people just
don't know how to be.
Yeah, they in those cases, it's just not good for the environment. And I'm not saying that the FAA is right per se. And what I'm saying is that because people can't be self-policing in these cases and have created significant problems, then, you know,
there
this is
you
what
go.
Happens.
Yeah.
And trust me, 400 feet off the ground, that's quite a ways up. You don't realize how far that is. That's a 40-story building.
Yep, and and during the recent wildfires, a professional company came into town and took 360-degree drone shots of the devastated area. And you really didn't have an appreciation for just how horrific the wildfire was until you looked at these drone shots and went, my God.
Well, nobody's going to argue that the views provided by drones are you know, not worth seeing and don't provide value. But in that case, that company, that was their business.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were authorized to go in there.
They were professionals. Do not try this at home.
No aircraft operating in the area at the time.
Yeah, this was all done with, you know, coordination and things like that. But to just go flying willy-nilly, as Brenda said, some firefighting operations have come to a halt because of the mistreatment here. Okay, I was actually looking at this. Well, what I want to do, do you have the texture app on your...
let's see, I don't think I have it on this.
By the way, texture is a great way to read magazines when you don't have room for a bunch of magazines. In fact, we're going to suspend a couple of our subscriptions because they're included in this $10 a month.
Yeah,
the paper, because they're included in the $10 a month texture. Now, Apple just bought texture, but you can chime in on this, Brenda. I wanted to mention this in the few minutes that we have left here. How companies turn you into money, and we have talked about this a few times. If you have a free service, it's not really free. You're giving up
right
information.
Yep.
You are the product.
Yep.
The best description of what's called the data economy comes from America Online, of all places. The once mighty internet service provider runs a tidy business in the ad exchange space. The site promoting the service shows happy partying people in white text that spells out things like monetize your most valuable asset. A publisher's audience is their currency. No matter how they make money from content, paid subscription, a publisher's core asset is audience and audience data. So this is all about how to shove advertising at you and make money off of that advertising. Whether you buy something or not, there's a huge amount of money changing hands
yep.
for shoving advertising at you. And the more that the platform can demonstrate that they are targeting specific people,
the more money they make.
The more money they make. When you use Gmail, that mail is scanned, and if you talk a lot about boats or fried chicken or
order from a company, any company,
yeah,
you'll start seeing ads for that.
If I go to, for instance, me personally, I sometimes visit the site for B&H, it's an audio-video firm out of New York. Lo and behold, the very next day, ads for B&H appear in my Facebook feed. Same with anything that I've looked at on Amazon. That is harvested data turned into targeted advertising.
Kind of scary.
And it's going to get more extreme. Advertising identifiers in the headers of mobile web traffic, browsers, customer tracking in stores using your Wi-Fi, mobile apps and ultrasonic tones from TVs can be used, can be detected by apps on smart devices to track what program you're watching. So you might want to put the smartphone in the bedroom when you're watching that particularly obnoxious show. Now, for example, and we've talked about this, the genetic information gathered by 23andMe could one day be used for advertising or for discrimination. If you've yeah. never watched the movie with Ethan Hawke called Gattaca, that's exactly what is going on. And Gattaca was done in like 1996, I think. But the protagonist is a person whose DNA indicated that he would have a heart attack by a certain age. Therefore, he could not get a job.
Right.
He was relegated to being a janitor.
Yes.
When he wanted to go, and he was a very smart guy. But because his health profile
right.
was, so the shot of the story is that he actually trades his genetic data with an individual who had been injured so that he could get, but had a perfect profile.
Uh-huh.
Interesting movie. We'll have to pull it back out. I think you may have seen it once, but it's a very chilling movie about a potential future where we are discriminated against because our genetic profiles show certain things. Scary, scary stuff. And there is right now no legal protection for that data in the United States. The European Union is starting to sit up and say, wait a minute.
Right.
This personal stuff is extremely dangerous.
Right.
Collected data has value because it's used in online advertising. Targeted advertising, these are more likely to result in a sale or at least a click because it's supposed to be more relevant. Now, here's a dark side to it. Targeted ads are more attuned to your desires and wants. But let's say you have somebody who is a recovering alcoholic.
Right.
And the system knows this, and it keeps shooting them ads for Johnny Walker.
Yeah.
Or something along those lines.
Yeah, that's insidious. Potentially harmful.
Vulnerable communities are being targeted for specific ads. And we have seen examples of things like beer and other things being aimed at youth, these tobacco products aimed at youths. Forever, there have been tie-ins with kids' shows and toys.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. And, you know, get your parents to buy you the Captain Jack whatever such-and-so toy. And that was a big thing some years ago. one of the Saturday morning cartoons were nothing more than half-hour advertisements for products.
Get parents to buy the latest, greatest toy associated with that.
So this is nothing brand new.
No, just a different take or using technology to take advantage of these things.
So these are retargeted ads, take into account your previous online activity in order to push an ad your way. This is where you would see an ad on one website, and then it shows up on another site. The ad literally follows you around.
Oh,
click me.
Yeah, that's annoying. I've seen things like that. It's like an ad here, go over there, and it's an ad for the same company. I'm like, really? I don't understand how that goes from, I've asked that. How come when I go here, I get an ad for there, and I haven't even looked at that? It's quite annoying.
Now, there is a popular conspiracy theory that phones and smart devices are always listening to you, and then ads are being pushed your way. So far, there hasn't been any documented proof of that. Some apps are found to be transmitting screenshots of your device activity. Other devices are listening for ultrasonic beacons from television sets. But Google says they have worked to suppress the use of that technology on Android. It's absolutely scary, fascinating story, and I came across it in, let me find it here, I believe it's PC Magazine. Let me look for it. PC Magazine, and the cover story, How Companies Turn You Into Money, and it's really a good article if you want to stay up on this stuff. The steps, what is being done, the steps that you can take. Now, the first reaction, well, let's just pass laws against it. Unfortunately, the legislators don't always understand what it is they're passing a law about.
Right.
For instance, these laws that are being passed in the European Union could have far-reaching effects well beyond what they're intended to have.
Intended
for,
yes.
So be careful what you wish
There's
for.
There's been a number of things to do that. Now, this is an interesting article that you had posted on Flipboard, that virtual reality motion sickness, which has been one of the limiting things, I think, of VR experiences, may be a thing of the past thanks to this breakthrough. The article says it comes from a source I'm not as familiar with, Alphr, A-L-P-H-R, mm-hmm. Posted on our Flipboard page. They call it cyber sickness.
Yeah.
They sound like a disease. But, you know,
this is one of the things that's held back full adoption of VR.
Yeah, exactly. Because the eyes and the ears and the body don't all match up, and it can be quite a problem. There's been a number of attempts to, you know, minimize this. And sometimes the nausea can last for quite some time. So there was a study done that revealed that cyber sickness is more than just a random bout of nausea, and it could be predicted and therefore prevented. So it'll be interesting to see how this all comes about. How they fix this?
We're so in the very earliest stages. Now, interesting thing, I'm gonna mention here real quick. We were talking about the ads that follow you around. Obviously, this page knows that I live. It's an ad for Coors. We protect those who protect our West,
yes.
And it's a picture of a firefighter.
Yes, I saw that. I've seen that.
Yeah, and obviously, this page figured out where I am. The area that I'm in, and decided I should probably buy a beer from them.
Yeah, because your tablet's labeled as being at some location.
Yeah, at some
in
location.
The
Don't be paranoid. Do be
address.
Prudent. The technology is here to be used. Don't be afraid of it, but be cognizant of the pros and cons. Be informed.
We try to keep you informed.
Wherever you go, whatever you do, be safe and be good to each other.
Ever since we started Boomer Tech Radio, Advanced Automotive has been part of our program. But Tim and Cody Morlock are more than just our advertisers. They're our friends, and they are our first choice when we have our personal vehicles serviced. Why? Well, Because after your home, your car is probably your second biggest investment, and it's vital that it be safe and dependable and get it running right. Advanced Automotive is listed on RepairPal.com, a national rating site where customers can leave reviews and even get an estimate on the cost of a repair. Go where the professionals take their vehicles to be serviced. Advanced Automotive in Reading, on the web at AdvancedAutoReading.com. Visit them at 5756 F Westside Road, just off Bonneview. Call them at 530-244-4423. Advanced Automotive.
You're listening to KCNR 1460, community talk radio for the North State. This is KCNR, Shasta, Reading.